From the Opubco studios at Britain and Broadway, you're listening to a News OK podcast.
Welcome to the News OK Pet Show. I'm Carrie Coppernall.
I'm Don Marks.
And I'm Brian Dean.
And we're joined today on the phone by Troy Tinker, the Master of Ceremonies for the world-famous Lipizzaner Stallions. Thank you for joining us, Troy.
Hi, my pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Well, let's talk about, you guys are coming to town Sunday, and for some, explain what exactly the Stallion Show is about for someone who's never heard of it, never seen it.
Well, the Lipizzaners are a breed of horse that were developed by the royal family of Austria nearly 450 years ago, and while they were developed to be war horses and the perfect dressage horse, the classical riding style we use in the show, they were also, during peacetime, to keep their steps and movements in practice for the battlefield, used to dance, to classical music. Composers of the day, like Mozart and others, would write music for them to dance to, and that's still what we do with our show, Equine Ballet. Of course, we also will show you those big leaps and jumps they're famous for, the airs above the ground. So it's a great evening of family entertainment, educational, entertaining, and fun for the whole family.
Now, I have to tell you, Troy, when I was, I would say about 8 or 9, I saw the Lipizzaner Stallions, and an 8 or 9-year-old girl, horses plus ballet might have been the most mesmerizing moment of my life. I thought it was amazing.
And her mom had to listen to I Want a Stallion for like 18 years.
What was so impressive to me was just the length of the program and how, I mean, I can't train my dog to do anything but sit. I mean, I can't imagine how much training you guys put in to do a show of that length.
Well, let's talk about that. You know, everything you see them do in the show, they do naturally before they've had any training. You must watch them while they're playing with other horses in the field. For about the first 3.5 to 4 years of their lives, that's how you know what their talent for movement consists of. We're not teaching a bear to ride a bicycle here. We simply teach them to do on cue what they already do naturally. So about age 4, their training starts 45 minutes a day, never more than that.
But really?
For six to nine years before you see them in performance.
So they're older and calmer horses.
Well, older and calmer, they're considered, Lipizzaners live a long time, usually about to 30 to 35 years old.
Wow.
And so they're long-lived horses that generally don't reach their prime until they're well into their 20s. So they usually retire from our show around 21 to 23 and go into their breeding program, into our breeding program, which is a great way, you know, to go into stud when you retire from work. It's a great way everybody should hit their career.
Yes, Hallman would love that
better
retirement.
Better than a 401k.
Well, talk about the breed specifically. What are things that distinguish a Lipizzaner from other horses?
Well, you wouldn't use them for racing. Their legs are a little short. They're a little heavy in the rear end, but that gives them that kind of balance that they need to do the maneuvers that they do. I think they're brighter than the average horse, although I'm a bit prejudiced.
You might be a little biased, Troy.
That might be just a little. I've been with them for 19 years, and so
you probably were the master of ceremonies whenever I saw the Lipizzaners in the beginning.
Thank you for that.
But it was probably like your first year, though.
I'll tell you, though, it seems like that to keep the show fresh for me and make me still be here after 19 years. I mean, after every performance, someone says, my parents took me to see this when I was a child. I had to bring my children to see it. That is an awesome responsibility, and you really become part of a family heritage and tradition, and that's why I'm still here after so many years. It's not your typical play. It's not your typical show. I was an actor, and I miss doing theater. Mm-hmm. This is certainly not the kind of work I thought I would do, but it's steady, and I love it, and I meet nice people, and I work with great horses.
Do the horses ever, I mean, I'm sure that they have a very strong work ethic. If they don't perform for, I don't know, a few days or a few weeks, do they get sort of antsy or are they ready to work?
Yeah, it's interesting you mention that because I almost went on that topic when we were talking about their retirement. About 50% of them don't take to retirement very easily. I think they miss the attention from the audience. I know they miss the attention from the backstage people. You know, they're always being petted or combed or braided or groomed or talked to or treated or massaged, something. I mean, they're always being quite pampered. And when they go into retirement, they're allowed to mate for the first time, and you'd think they would take to that. But we've actually had horses that don't mate, won't eat, and they start to fail. And we bring them back into the show and just put them in a couple of simple things. And, you know, and they eventually get the idea, and we kind of ease them into retirement. So they really do like what they do, and they're active participants in it.
Okay, I have a question. You were speaking earlier of being an actor, and I was telling Carrie before we went on that about how the movie Crimson Tide with Denzel Washington, Gene Hackman has an extended discussion about the Lippizzaner Stallions, and I'm wondering if that like brought you guys extra attention. Do you find people, a lot of people who'd never heard of you before, can get in through something like that?
Yeah, you know, I think after the release of that movie, that our audiences became a bit more ethnic, surprisingly enough. Nothing wrong with that, certainly. We appeal to a broad cross-section and always have. But with our show, you get people that like the classical music aspect, the horsemanship aspect, of course, people that are history buffs on European military history and, of course, American military history because Patton rescued them. So, yeah, I think it did give us a run, a boost in popularity, people that were curious. For those of, I won't go into the dialogue, but I know the scene you're talking about where they talk about where they were from. And
it's kind of a key
born,
plot
they're
point.
White, but they're born black and all of that sort of thing. So, but I think that movie helped to introduce a new generation of people to the Lippizzaners. Of course, before that, there was a Disney movie all about their rescue at the end of World War II. Called Miracle of the White Stallions, and for parents out there, that's a great way to get your kids acclimated and interested in the Lippizzaners as well.
Well, do they have specific riders each horse?
No, I know why you're asking that. The Spanish Riding School in Vienna has done that for years, but they're having difficulty with that now. They were an Austrian military institution up until 2000. They're privatized now. So people would go through their riding school, make a lifetime commitment to being a part of it, and they would assign them 1 to 3 horses for the lifetime of the horse or the human, whoever
right.
went first. But we can't do that. We're an American company. The benefit, though, is that the horses are used to very, very many people being around. One person may take care of them but may not necessarily ride them in the show.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Troy, for taking the time to talk to us. We know that you are a busy guy, to say the least. So thank you very much for taking some time out for Pet Show.
My pleasure. Thank you. And keep up the good work, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Also, we have a very special part of Pet Show today. The first 2 people to email me the answer to this trivia question will win a family 4-pack of tickets to the 6 o'clock show on Sunday. The trivia question is, in what country did the Lippizzaners originate? So you can email the answer to that question to ccoppernoll@opubco.com, C-C-O-P-P-E-R-N-O-L-L at O-P-U-B-C-O.com. For those of you who are interested, the Lippizzaners are amazing, and they will be here at 2 o'clock on Sunday, March 22nd, at the Ford Center, so you can check them out. So now to some pet news. Brian Dean?
Well, we're going to start out with an interesting story out of Spokane, Washington. Now, I imagine all of you guys have bought secondhand furniture at some point, somehow or another. Local couple.
Seen my house? Yeah.
Yeah. A local couple there in Spokane planned to buy a couch at the Value Village in Spokane, and the couch was left at the thrift store along with a love seat and private donation. So Vicki Mendenhall and her boyfriend went and they bought the couch and took it home, and they started hearing meowing. And it turned out they found later they couldn't figure it out for a long time. It took them a few days to figure it out, but there was a cat inside the couch.
This reminds me, one time I interviewed somebody, I'll post a link to this column. I wrote about this gal who bought a houseboat in Indiana and drove it back here. And when they got back, they found a bunch of kittens in a drawer of the houseboat. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. So just imagine
hiding out where you don't expect them.
And so now they have a cat. They
had
a couch, and now they have a couch and a cat.
Find the remote and the change factor, too.
They are looking for the cat's
owner. The cat's recording it.
But they are looking, but apparently... actually, they found the cat's owner. A friend of the guy who owns it saw the spot on TV.
Fluffy?
And said, hey,
cat.
I know that cat. And so a guy named Bob Killian is actually the one that donated the couch and had no idea that his cat was inside when he gave it away. So he was happy to get his cat back. Next up, we have a follow-up to a story we brought you a couple months ago. If any of you remember, we had... our intern at the time, David Christopher, who's from England, on to talk about
squirrel
flavored
yuck
potato chips, or as they call them in England, crisps.
Crisps.
Walkers, which is kind of like their Lay's. Actually, the bags look a lot like Lay's bags. Mm-hmm. They introduced, they had kind of a vote, and they brought up some strange flavors, and one of them was Cajun Squirrel. Well, apparently, actual squirrels love the squirrel flavored crisps.
What?
Yes. They apparently, and I don't That's have creepy. It with me, but I will send you guys later a picture of a squirrel eating a squirrel flavored chip. It's a little cannibalistic and scary.
It is.
But
you don't see potatoes eating potato chips.
But oh, apparently they normally like to these wildlife lovers Nigel and Camilla Cullum had put a packet of these chips on their bird table, and the squirrels stole them and they just couldn't get enough of them. So
thank you, Brian.
I guess if we ever have like human flavored something, we can all eat them and think we're no worse than the squirrels.
Oh, pass. No. But thank you. Thank you, Brian. Dawn?
All right. Yeah, I have tail tips today.
Please tell me they don't involve anything flavored like a squirrel.
No.
Good. Then carry on.
This is National Poison Prevention Week. Ta-da. So the ASPCA has a few tips for us. Number one, just say no to drugs.
Okay.
No. Actually, human medications are one of the main problems that the ASPCA Poison Control Center sees. Pets will snatch up pills that are lying around.
Yeah, if you drop them.
Yes. So keep an eye on your medication because
<They will.
laughs> your medication can be harmful to your pet. And then number two is bugged out. Insecticides are a big problem. You know, flea and tick products, number one, but then also things that you might use in your yard.
You got to read those directions carefully.
Yes. Number three, food, which we've talked about many times, you know, grapes and raisins, avocados,
onions,
citrus fruits, and chocolate. And then don't eat the daisies, number four. Lots of plants. Household and outside that can be harmful. So you want to pay attention to that kind of thing. And then don't take the bait. Number five, last. Chemical bait products.
Yeah.
Can be harmful, obviously.
And there are lots of no-kill traps and stuff like that. Like you can get... I have a no-kill mouse trap in my house right now.
Well, and
that the dogs keep stealing the food out of.
Whoops. The thing that I did not know that I thought was interesting is that some baits have inactive ingredients meant to attract rodents, but they can also be attractive to your pets.
And it's, I don't know, it's sort of like a kid. It's like they don't know, you can't exactly explain to a dog, this is not good for you. If it looks like food, they're going to eat it.
You also can't explain to a squirrel, don't eat crisps that taste like yourself.
But the ASPCA Animal Poison Control Center, I'm going to give that number. That's 888-426-4435. Or you can go to www.aspca.org/APCC.
Very good. All right. Well, thank you, Dawn.
Thank you,
Brian.
Welcome.
Thank all of you for listening. And go out and take care of your pets.